Are reincarnated people always coming back from being a famous person? Well, not really. We'll find out, though, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Brian, they are not all famous people, are they?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, very rare to find a famous person.
Really?
It's exactly what you would expect statistically, because there aren't that many famous people. Occasionally, one will show up here and there, but oftentimes it's some sort of distortion or a metaphor. For example, once I had a patient who thought he was Napoleon. And he was describing the battle scene, the uniforms, and it turned out to be very accurate. And he was describing this scene with much emotion. So it was odd to me because I had never found anyone really famous, a kind of musician who was well-known but not really that well-known, but that was about it. But here was this man thinking he was Napoleon. And in this life, he needed power. He felt powerless in many situations. And it turned out, as we look closer at that life, that he was a corporal in Napoleon's army. And he was within a few hundred yards of him many times. He could see him. Of course, the uniforms were accurate. The battle was accurate. What happened was accurate. The symptom that he resolved because of this memory turned out to be accurate. But he was not Napoleon. So we really don't find famous people. That's a common myth about regression therapy. And there are a lot of these myths, George, like, well, it can't be because the number of souls is greater, the number of bodies, on physical bodies on this planet is greater than ever before. So
right.
Where do the souls come from?
Yeah, there was a movie about the Hall of the Soul of Records.
And, right.
Or the Hall of Souls, rather.
Right.
And they were going to run out. There was only one left. It was in the Guff, I think.
Right. But, you know, that's as soon as you get a chance to just tell people to relax, let's talk for a little while, there are answers to this. And there are many to that issue of the numbers, and then the most common one is that this is not the only place. Souls exist in many dimensions or other planets. This is not the only one. So there are really many more souls than there are bodies in this one small school. Or perhaps souls can split and have simultaneous experiences. There are many possible explanations. And again, it's just to keep an open mind. There are always explanations for these objections. I remember getting unlikely support one time. I got a phone call from a psychiatrist at Harvard named John Mack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and John...
One of the best. God love him.
Yes. John got in touch with me because... And I didn't know him, and I guess he had heard of me because he was confirming my work. He was actually using hypnosis and other regression techniques to take people back in time. In his case, he was looking for, I think it was abduction experience.
Yes, he handled the alien abductions, and he was one of the few in the medical community to stick his neck out. He got shunned by his own colleagues, belittled by his own colleagues, by his university at Harvard, and then, as you know, tragically died in London when he stepped off a curb and got hit by a drunk driver.
Yes, I know about that. Very sad. But I found him to be a very brilliant man. And grounded too, not because what happened, he in doing the regressions to abduction experiences, and I didn't know much about that, but he was finding many of his patients were remembering past lives. So he got in touch with me and said, you know, I'm confirming all of your work. I'm finding all these people with past lives, and they seem to be getting better. And so he suggested that we do a conference up in Boston, and we did it. And
first time you met up there for the first time, I guess, then, huh?
Yeah, it was fascinating, and I really appreciated his courage.
What did he mean by they're getting better?
Well, they were getting rid of their symptoms, even though that's not why he was doing it. So many of his people who had abduction experiences also had carried forward symptoms from past lives. That is, maybe they had a phobia from the 17th century. Maybe they were buried alive in ancient Egypt, and, you know, because that was the practice that day, where servants perhaps were entombed with their owners or masters and died of oxygen deprivation or...
You know, it's not that would drive me nuts. It would be the fact that I'd be encased and you couldn't move around.
Yeah, that
would drive me nuts.
Absolutely. And I found many people suffering from claustrophobia in the present life had that experience or that similar experience in a past life. And then the claustrophobia disappears.
Did you ever come across a situation, Brian, where someone, let's say in this life, had a mole or a birthmark in their past life? If you saw pictures of somebody else or anything, the mole and the birthmark were in the same spot.
It's related to that, George. And there's another psychiatrist, he's older now, named Ian Stevenson, who's a professor emeritus of psychiatry at the University of Virginia. He has done and accumulated more than 1,000 cases of children with past life memories. And they often have a mole or a birthmark at the site of a significant or often mortal wound in a past life. For example, a Civil War soldier shot in the neck, having a bullet-shaped birthmark on the neck in the present.
Isn't that something?
So that does happen, and that one's not even rare. That's pretty frequent.
What are some of the unusual cases?
Anything? I guess, you know, to me now, unusual can be, it has to be really unusual. But I guess to someone new to this, they're all unusual. But to me, as a psychiatrist, it's the healing ones that are fascinating because, you know, to just see someone get rid of a physical symptom, sometimes it's a significant symptom like a cancer. And I'm not saying this is a cure for cancer. That's happened. I remember one woman who just doing this, you know, she dissolved breast masses. She had ultrasounds and mammograms. And for 6 months preceding her coming to see me as a patient, then we started doing regressions, but also meditations, intensive work. And she went back to have a biopsy. She was also listening to the CDs 4 times a day, really got into it because she was so anxious about the surgeries and what this meant. She went back for biopsy, and the lumps were gone. These were not cystic changing with her periods. They were solid masses, like tumors. They weren't there. There were two of them, and they had disappeared. And the radiologist came out to the surgeon and said, "They're gone." And the surgeon said, "Well, we better operate anyway based on the old film."
You got to be kidding me.
That she had gotten some pre-medication, some Valium, but she said, "Oh, no." And she and her friend who was driving her came all the way down to my office and said and told me this story. And they've never come back. This was about 12 years ago. So it's rare, but physicians often call these spontaneous remissions or a placebo effect or something like that. But these are amazing to me that the body, like the woman Victoria I told you about earlier, healing that spinal damage, bone damage from her cancer and the regeneration of tissue. But I was also amazed at the Chinese woman speaking English or whenever that happens.
Sure.
That's amazing. Or like Patrick with that alien migration, because there's something that seems so profound about that, even though you can't validate that the way you can a foreign language. You can go to a language department or linguistics expert, or you can look up dog tag numbers and things like that, but the old ones, they're too far back in time. And yet, the healing still takes place, and people are telling me some of the same things. We're going into the future. I find it amazing now when I hear from physicists that the work I'm doing is kind of consistent with string theory and cosmology and inflation or things I don't even know about.
Let's talk about some of that since you brought that up. Earlier you talked about parallel universes and you believe that, you know, there's another you, there's another me over there and things are going maybe simultaneously. There could be millions of these universes or thousands of them. Who knows?
I think that the number is probably infinity. That's what the physicists are telling me, that this is not the only universe. there's an infinity of universes in modern cosmology, and this is kind of an extension of string theory.
But some could be empty universes. Some could have our planetary system. I think it would vary, don't you?
Oh, for sure. But it also can be like clones of now. For example, I was talking to one really prominent physicist, and we were talking about, every time you make a significant decision, that can create a new universe. And since there's an infinite number, this can keep going on. For example, you can decide to take a job here or there, and your decision will create a different future. But the you that decided not to take the job, that being is also having an experience. That created a universe. It seems almost counterintuitive. It runs against our common sense. And yet it's what physicists are finding. And this is what I find in doing this type of research also. The past life seems almost simple to me now. Yes, your soul lived in the 18th century, and
that's almost common, isn't it?
It's almost common, and when you hear physicists, they've become the mystics of the current age. They're the mystical ones now.
What have you concluded, Brian, about what's out there?
My conclusion is, from looking up from many different perspectives, from my original perspective as a psychiatrist and as a clinician and working with patients, but also now talking with many people from the different religions and the mystical traditions of all the religions, mystical Christianity, mystical Buddhism, Kabbalah and Judaism, that, and physicists and other scientists, that there's a commonality. There really seem, the words may change, but we're talking about souls as kind of an infinite consciousness. And maybe all souls are connected. As a matter of fact, the title of this book that we're talking, one of the books, Same Soul, Many Bodies, the newest one, the one that goes into the future, and where I have cases like Patrick's, this actually comes from a quote from a Roman philosopher named Plotinus. And it has a double meaning. So for me, same soul, many bodies meant, well, the same soul or consciousness, that part of it, of us, which exists after the death of the physical body and keeps going on, gets reborn into a new body, a baby's body. That's past lives and reincarnation and future lives. But Plotinus meant, well, maybe there's one and the same soul in all of our bodies. Maybe we're all connected. Maybe there's an energy, a consciousness that connects all of us, and that this illusion of separateness is not real. It's an illusion. Well, that's what the ancient Buddhists are writing about in the mystical tradition of the religions. That's what the physicists are talking about. So for me, it means that we don't die, that our consciousness, we go on after the death of the physical body, experiencing on the other side. And you know, we talked about a little bit out-of-body experiences, people with near-death experiences, experiencing the same kinds of phenomena, the same thing. They float out of the body and realize we're not our bodies. We go on. And this is what it means to me, George, that there is no death, that there is really a consciousness that we are just beginning to comprehend, that there is energy and universe and consciousness way beyond what our conscious mind comprehends at the moment. I picked up the newspaper today and I saw that some people were confirming the existence of black matter.
Dark matter, yeah.
Dark matter, yeah. Dark matter.
Yep. They're beginning to, through gravitation, they're beginning to realize that it's out there, even though they can't see it.
Exactly, and dark energy, and things that we have trouble comprehending. We don't even know our own nature, that of the soul. And here are all these other... It's fascinating to me, and it means don't get depressed. We're immortal. We're eternal. Our consciousness is, and we have to stop acting like we're just our bodies, and we act like a primitive people. So we're still violent and making wars and doing all this when our future, our present, is so much beyond what our present consciousness can comprehend.
Well, Brian, if someone, let's say, was a murderer in a past life, does he become the victim of a murder in, let's say, this life?
It can work that way, but not necessarily. It may not be the very next life, because we have many lessons to work on. But that's the concept of karma that we're talking about now. That's not a religious concept. That just, it means, of course, what you sow, that's what you reap, and it is in all the religions. But it's really a sense of justice. You don't escape that. So if you murdered in a past life, it doesn't mean you're going to get murdered. Maybe a relative or a loved one will get murdered, and you'll feel the pain of it. But it doesn't even have to happen, because if you, through some sort of transformation or inspiration or revelation or whatever, realize how useless and futile violence is, how bad it is, and you've learned the lesson, then you don't have to suffer it. You don't have to go through it, because you've learned. And it's not for punishment, this concept of karma. It's not about punishment. It's only about learning. So once you learn, then it drops away. So if you killed someone in a past life, but now you know, for in whatever way you know, that this is wrong and that we're supposed to be compassionate and nonviolent, then it does not have to happen to you.
What can we do, Brian, to get souls that are here now, that are in you and in me, what can we do to get them so enlightened that we don't have to just worry about past life regression to reach perfection, that it's worked on now?
Well, I think we're moving in that direction, but it seems very slow, and there are a lot of third graders. It's like we're in a one-room classroom, and we've got a lot of third graders, and they're kind of disrupting it all. But you take a look at what I'm doing. I'm working with patients one at a time and sometimes in group. What you're doing, you're opening minds all over the planet. I mean, I don't know how many millions and millions of people your show reaches.
It keeps changing. It keeps going up, Brian.
It's going up, and you don't even know, George, when that person who's listened to the show communicates and tells someone who hasn't listened to it, that it's almost like throwing a stone into a pond, the rippling effect that your show has or others like it have in opening minds. It's like an old story someone told me about a person on a beach watching someone picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean. But there were thousands and thousands of starfish. So this confused the person watching. He said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm throwing starfish back into the ocean. They're stranded on the beach and they'll die." And the person said, "But there are millions of starfish. You cannot make a difference." And the person throwing them back held out his hand where he was holding a starfish, and he said, "It makes a big difference to him."
Yeah,
we can just work one at a time or millions at a time as you're doing, but that's how it works. And the spiritual principle, George, is don't worry about the results. Just do the right thing, do the compassionate thing. The results will take care of themselves.
In a regression, has anybody ever talked about being an animal before? Insect or anything like that?
It comes up rarely. It seems like once a human, always a human. But sometimes people remember animals as like a metaphor, like they may have remember being a lion, but it's really a message to be courageous. There's some decision that's going to take courage, and usually I see it in that context.
That's amazing. It is. Your work has got to be fascinating for you, Brian.
It's been a blessing to me. I've met people from all over the planet. John Mack is one, but...
I wonder if he's going to be or maybe he's already been reincarnated. Huh?
Probably
he's out there
many
somewhere.
Times. I don't know if he's back already, but he'll be one of those cosmic investigators, you know. I remember debating Carl Sagan years ago about this. He was not a believer.
I wonder if he was toward the latter parts of his days.
He was changing. He was changing, but we had this debate, and he's a very bright man. He was changing in the latter years. And in this debate, he was coming up with sort of intellectual points like the numbers thing, but he soon realized that he wasn't a physician or a therapist,
right.
And he just then became a wonderful skeptic, asking really good questions, and then we had a beautiful debate.
Well, let's talk about real science when we come back, Brian, right here on Coast to Coast AM. I first heard that song when I watched the DVD, the great scary movie called Lady in White. If you haven't seen that, you are missing it. But they play that song in it. It's just neat, and it's always stuck with me. Very appropriate for tonight with our guest, Dr. Brian Weiss, and we'll be back with Brian in a moment. Let me tell you about the After Dark newsletter, where you get 14 issues for the price of 12. It's a nice little package deal for you. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. You know, Hick, Brian, I was going to ask you, what does real science think about things that you do? But you do real science, and that's the problem. You're a psychiatrist. You've got your degree. You know, you've been through the trenches. You do real science. So I'm not going to say that anymore. What do some of the other people say, the colleagues? What do they say about this?
It's very mixed. I have so many psychiatrists and psychologists and others have come up to me, or cardiologists and emergency room physicians who have witnessed near-death experiences and other phenomena like that. And they'll be very supportive, many one at a time. The groups like the American Psychiatric Association, they're more skeptical, but they don't know what it is. They've never really studied it. They haven't tried it. Real science is observation. Then from observation, with a neutral mind, from observation, you develop a hypothesis, you test it, that becomes a theory. And a scientific theory is not theory in everyday usage. It's much more than that. Then it becomes a law, a scientific law. But you start with observation with an open mind, a neutral mind. And we know that from basic science, from physicists telling us that your expectations, if you watch particles moving through certain chambers, that can influence the outcome of experiments. And all scientists know that. So to keep an open mind, and that's what I've tried to do, but many scientists have forgotten that. They'll put something down that they haven't read about, they don't know about. So I tell stories about this because it's so difficult for us to open our minds. It's so hard. I remember one time in 1992, I was in New York to be on the Joan Rivers television show, mm-hmm. not the Home Shopping Network one, but when she had a talk show.
You're right.
And I hypnotized her. This is an aside. I hypnotized her. She went back to England around 1809, where her mother in this life, whose death she was mourning, was her daughter in that life, and the daughter died young, and it really helped her a great deal. But while I was in New York, I picked up the New York Times, and I read that the church had just exonerated Galileo of his accursed heresy.
Yeah.
that I didn't know, and those are not my words, accursed heresy. And I read this article in the New York Times, and it was surprising to me because I thought Galileo, who talked about the Earth not being the center of the solar system, but it was the sun, he had done his work around 1630, and I thought he had been exonerated at least by the time that Sir Isaac Newton proved that Galileo was correct.
No, that took a long time.
So I read further in the article and I saw that the investigation into Galileo had been going on for 12 and a half years. Well, we had already walked on the moon by this time. So it was very odd to me. Came back to Miami and I said to a friend, well, wouldn't it be interesting if Galileo had reincarnated as Sir Isaac Newton, and Newton was born a year after Galileo's death, more or less, and then prove that he was correct. He would be highly motivated to do that. My friend said, well, what if he came back now as the Pope? And this was the last Pope. What if he came back now as the Pope and he cleared himself? So that was like a joke, and we thought, oh, you know, that would be interesting. And I would tell that story and say, well, it would be only really interesting if the Pope really had a strong interest in astronomy. And then someone let me know that the Pope had a very strong interest in astronomy, even had connections to an observatory in Arizona.
Oh, the Vatican owns it.
Yes. And I thought, oh my goodness, this story I've been telling, there's something more to it. So it's so hard to keep an open mind. If Galileo wasn't exonerated until 1992, how hard is it for scientists even to open their minds and say, wait, I don't know about this, but maybe I better learn more? I run into this all the time. So what I tell people is just keep an open mind. Try not to have an agenda there, but observe neutrally. And then try it, experience it, read about it, learn it, do it. And that's how you learn. That's what I try to tell therapists about past life therapy. Just keep an open mind. Try it, do it, observe it. Try it with your patients. Try it yourself. And then you'll learn more. You'll find out more about it. Read the books. Read the data. But a lot of the skeptics really are not skeptics, because skeptics, in the Greek sense of the word, in the original sense, meant someone who provides an alternative explanation for phenomena.
My late aunt would have loved to have talked with you, Dr. Shafika Caregula.
Uh-huh.
She was into all of this.
Yes, it's amazing how many people are. I come across very well-known people, and lots of people that it surprised me. They're psychoanalysts, and they're scientists, and they have a very strong, but oftentimes private, belief in all of these things that we're talking about tonight.
You were talking about Carl Sagan before the top of before the break, and I'm wondering if you had a chance to finish that statement.
Well, we had this debate, and eventually I just had to say to him, Carl, you're an astronomer. Why are you talking about these clinical matters? Because my patients are getting better. Here are the details. And I told him about cases of xenoglossy, the speaking of foreign languages. And there are wonderful cases about that, people finding their children from past lives. He knew about none of this. I don't know what kind of debate he was expecting. But then he apologized to me. He said, Brian, I've not been acting as a scientist, have I? And I said, no. And then we talked about what science is, just as we just talked about. And he said, well, then I'm going to ask you questions and keep an open mind, and I'm going to study and read about this. And he did. And as he went on, his beliefs started to change, because he knew so much more. Einstein was a mystic. Einstein had wonderful, not just his observations and his theories, but he would talk about life as being it being necessary in life to keep an open mind, because much of what we see is a kind of optical illusion of the soul. Those were Einstein's words. Albert Schweitzer believed in reincarnation. One of my books, a book about soulmates, people finding themselves from other lives, and that kind of feeling of familiarity and of just knowing this new person at depths far beyond what you could know from just a week or a month or something like that. It is a book called Only Love is Real. I started each chapter of that book with a famous quote from a famous person, almost all of them from the West, because we kind of assume people from the East believe in past lives and reincarnation. So the people that I was able to find quotes about past lives, people who believed in past lives, started with Plato, who wrote about past lives and was a strong believer, and all of his disciples. Plato, Cicero, Nietzsche, Albert Schweitzer, Benjamin Franklin, many scientists, Khalil Gibran, many writers, the Lake poets. It's amazing to me how many of our icons, how many of our famous people believed in reincarnation. And now, George, according to Gallup surveys, one in 1994, so this is a while ago, about one-third of people in the United States believe in past lives.
I bet that would be much higher now.
I think it's higher.
Yeah, that's a 12-year-old study.
Yes.
Just with this program alone.
Right, people right. You're changing millions of people
that.
Tonight. I know.
Do you think that, let's say, the soul, and let's tread easily here, but the soul of someone like Jesus would have reincarnated? Or do you think it would just stay in its moment of perfection? The reason why I say that, there are so many similarities of other civilizations that have had someone like a Christ there. It's been in South America. It's been in Asia. And I'm wondering if he has come back several times.
Well, there are even in religious traditions, there's talk of that. But most of them involve Jesus incarnating before his life as Jesus, for example, as Buddha or something.
Right.
Previously. My own thinking is that probably not, because the message was so powerful and the person so advanced that that energy doesn't need to reincarnate here to teach the lesson. It's right here in front of us. But it's possible, because that kind of incredible soul or spirit could do whatever it wanted to, could reincarnate. It would be completely voluntarily.
Well, maybe it did reincarnate as a teacher. Not that it had to, but that
right.
It wanted to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that could be. And that was such a powerful time and such a powerful person. But people have written before about the soul that came as Moses and then as Buddha, then as Jesus, being, in a line of incarnations to teach lessons or model how people should be. And I think that's very important, because the model is that of love. That's what all of the great religions really talk about, love. That's the bottom line. So this, what we're seeing now, this kind of violence, and as you talked about in the first hour, this is not very spiritual. The spiritual act would be love and compassion.
I think you're right, Brian. And if this planet doesn't change soon, we're going to have severe problems.
I agree with that, and that's kind of, we're still going to be around. We may be looking at it from the other side, but this planet, which is such a beautiful planet, with its so much to learn here in a physical dimension, this is the hard place. But a beautiful planet, we can experience love and emotions and smell flowers, and there's so much beauty here. It would be a shame to destroy it.
But sure would.
We have the technology, and to me, it's always been a race, George. The race right now going on is the technology is advancing so rapidly. Are we developing spiritually or consciously at a rapid enough pace to keep up with it? And that's the real race that's going on now.
Do computers help you in your field?
They help in some ways, certainly in validating cases and finding information and sharing data. But I also work a lot with, so they do help. There's no question about that. But to use a computer too much when it's taking away from the right brain functionings, because that's something that I have a question with. Because I think we should be meditating or being introspective or contemplating or exercising right brain functions, intuitive abilities. You have a book coming out that may be going into this also.
Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, it mentions you. It is about why I think we need to change now and pretty fast.
I kind of agree with that premise, and I hope it that just opens more minds, because the input that I'm getting from my patients is that we're on the clock. It's ticking. There comes a point when some things may become irreversible. The planet is going to survive. That seems, but how many people do is really the issue.
Well, and like that past life talked about, the future person, there weren't that many people left on the planet. Something happened.
Right, something happened. I still think it's a choice. But did this happen before? Did this happen with Atlantis? Did this happen with Mars? Or some, have people had to leave places because they had kind of ruined their homes and then they need a new place and then they come here?
Tell me a little bit about Atlantis and the people you've talked to about that.
Well, many people describe a similar. Even people who have never heard of it, by the way, which is very interesting to me, because you can say, well, someone who's been reading about it, that's one thing, but some people never heard about it. They describe the same kinds of civilization. So just to kind of generalize and summarize from my patients going back in time, and this is one of those situations, I think, when there'll be more data found when we're ready to find it, and I think the time is getting closer. that there probably was a civilization that existed anywhere from 10 to 30,000 years ago or even farther back that seemed to be doing research with different forms of energy, and that was very advanced in many ways, and that had somehow, because of this work with energy being used for not in the best way, caused kind of disruptions and cataclysmic events, earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and tidal waves and tsunamis that destroyed much of that civilization.
Did they talk about their technology?
It talks about it a lot, and people describe telepathic communication, machines that could fly but based on energy. It talked about healing. A lot of people had experience with healing rods and healing energies and regeneration of limbs and organs. The medical part of it advanced quite a lot in that civilization. And some of the survivors, and I think Plato wrote about this also, seem to have been incorporated into some of the civilizations around the Mediterranean area, such as Egypt and maybe Greece, but particularly Egypt, and maybe even in the Western Hemisphere. That's why some of the similarities, perhaps in pyramid structures and mathematics, when there was really not that much contact from ancient Egypt to ancient Guatemala or Mayan civilization. So I think it's interesting. It's very difficult to validate. I mean, that's too long ago. So all I have is kind of correlation from many people describing similar scenes, this kind of regression archaeology that haven't been validated yet. I do believe we're going to find remnants of more advanced civilizations as but they're probably buried far beneath the earth,
right,
or deep in the ocean.
Yeah, but that would be an exciting time.
It will be.
Come across that.
We get to that. We really need to keep hopeful and not give up because of all the violence in the world, or not to get too pessimistic. I mean, I don't think we're going backwards. I think there are a lot of good people, a lot of good work is going on now, but it just seems worse than it is because the news technology is so much better. So, you know, at any moment you can go on to the internet or turn on CNN and find out what's happening in Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan, and you know it right away. Whereas 100 years ago, or 200 or 500 years ago, terrible things were going on.
And people didn't know about it for a long time,
exactly,
until the reports got back to their little newspapers and everything else.
Exactly. So, you know, now technology is advanced, so we're hearing about these terrible things right away. But it's also advanced in war technology, and so that a few bad people or a few ignorant people can do much more damage than we could with a bow and arrow or a single gun many years ago.
What kind of phone calls do you want next hour from people? Do you want past people who think they might have been in a past life, or
sure,
just general questions, or both for you?
Oh, whatever you would like. I'm completely open to anybody calling.
Okay, great. And the book, Same Soul, Many Bodies, where do you get it, Brian?
You can get any of these books. There are eight now. I know through your website people can get it. It's all of these are in the bookstores or through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Same Soul, Many Bodies is the book that goes into the future. But if it's a new person, they're new to this whole thing,
right?
I think Many Lives, Many Masters, the first book I wrote, the book about how my life changed because of that patient, Catherine, is a good way to start.
Okay.
Same Soul, Many Bodies, that's more advanced. So that would be like, that would be next. or Many Lives, Many Masters might be the one I would start with. And it's there. It's in paperback. It's a very quick book to read. So I think I would start there. And then some of them have the CDs in them, Mirrors of Time. And if people want to experience for themselves, I would go to those books, too.
Very good. Stay with us, Brian. We'll take phone calls next hour. Get ready. Well, you're already ready on Coast to Coast AM.